This is one of those classic things of why we tell people don't let your politics get in the way of your investing, because investing's hard enough, and you start throwing political lenses or political filters on top of it, and it gets rather difficult.
We already know now because of Doge that there was money that was going with no receipts, billions and billions of dollars that was just flying out.
He goes, if this was a public company, then it would be delisted. And the people who ran it would go to prison.
Zach Abraham. Hello, my friend.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
I missed you last week. You still did Doge Watch on vacation. I did not, however. So we know which of us is more dedicated.
Well, or which of us is thinking about these things even where they're on vacation. I don't think it's really it's a good thing. It's more of my obsession. But,
no,
you know,
that's
just
fine.
Not eating. Yeah, you can't let it down, right?
There are worse obsessions. All right, so we're talking about starting off Elon and Tesla slash Doge. So there is an analyst by the name of Dan Ives, and he is basically warning that if Elon doesn't back away from his government role, Tesla is going to suffer badly. Do you agree with that?
No, and I don't agree with anything Dan Ives says because I think he's a complete idiot. So first of all, what's happening at we've been saying this for a long, Tesla's valuation makes absolutely no sense. Okay. It never has. And it, as long as this game continues or, you know, there's so many different reasons the stock gets overvalued, but it's completely ludicrous, right? So Tesla is an automobile. They're bringing in this, they're bringing in that. Great. You know what? We'll factor that in to their valuation when we see it. But Tesla's got a really big problem right now, which is their price. First of all, for the stock, the valuation on their stock was predicated on the idea that, you know, if you go back to Stephen 4 or 5 years ago, the narrative around Tesla was no matter what, we cannot keep up with the demand. Okay. We have found out that that is a complete joke. Okay. That is not true. Revenues were down 8% year over year last year. That doesn't happen with companies that can't keep up with demand. The other issue that Tesla has is that Chinese, you know, going back to the Chinese issues, Chinese manufacturers have caught up to them in a lot of ways, and caught up to their technology in certain parts of their battery technology. They passed it. We were just reading today about some batteries that are being developed by BYD and one other Chinese manufacturer that are getting 300 miles of range on a 5-minute charge. Okay. They're also very much discounted models compared to Tesla. So it's going to eat into the number one selling car for them, the Model 3. So these are all problems that exist completely outside of, you know, Elon's work with Doge. But, you know, even now, Tesla's been hit pretty hard. We actually made some good money on it this year because we were short. But it's gotten rocked pretty hard. And you go look at the valuation. I mean, you go look at U.S. automobile manufacturers. You're trading at like, I don't know, maybe 11, 12, 13 times earnings. Tesla's still at 120, 130 with revenues declining. So it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, the only way you can support Tesla's valuation from here is if you think, unmanned taxis and robots are coming out tomorrow, and they're not. It's going to be a while if they're successful at getting those to market. So no, I don't think now is Doge helping him? Probably not. I mean, would he have sold some more Teslas here in the United States if not for Doge? Maybe in Europe. Yeah, maybe on the margins. But I think the underlying Chinese competition and then just Tesla's general overvaluation, you know, that to me is 95% of why the stock's in trouble. And to back it up, right? Like I'm not just sitting there throwing accusations. That's why we shorted the thing at $400. Right? It didn't make any sense. And I was on Twitter saying, guys, you need to get out of the way of this thing. This makes no sense. You got a company that's trading at 170 times earnings whose revenue is decreasing. Okay. You can't. 120 times earnings, 170 times earnings is ridiculous. And that's crazy expensive if you're growing revenues at 25, 30% a year. You can't support, anyway, yeah, it's just, to me, it's a valuation story.
Yeah, everybody's trying to make it about politics. And I tend to agree with you that, yeah, I mean, even sane people might not be eager to buy a Tesla because they don't want to have to constantly be worried that somebody's going to bang it up or light it on fire or whatever it is. But I've also heard from a lot of conservatives who are like, I never thought of buying a Tesla and now I'm going to buy one just out of the principle of the matter. So I can't imagine on net that the politically motivated buy or not buy of Tesla would be that significant.
No, I don't think it is. But what I do think is meaningful is, you know, China was their second biggest market. Okay. And, you know, there's a part of you too that has to sit back. And I have never been an Elon Musk sycophant. I pride myself in not being a sycophant of anybody. But it's one of the things you got to admire. It's not like when Elon was backing these policies, he was unaware that this might hurt his Chinese business.
Yeah.
I think he was fully aware of that. But yeah, it is what it is. And am I saying to go out there and short the stock? No, we don't have a position in it. I'm not rooting against Tesla, right? My job is to manage risk and make our clients money. So I'm not like, it wasn't a political thing. I'm cheering Elon on and hoping he's as successful as he can possibly be. But you know, this is one of those classic things of why we tell people don't let your politics get in the way of your investing, because investing's hard enough, and you start throwing political lenses or political filters on top of it, and it gets rather difficult.
Yeah, like Tim Walz cheering on Tesla stock going down while like Minnesota state workers rely on it for their pensions.
Yeah, well, and then not only that, but look at all the American jobs. I mean, I'd say it's so stupid, but it does fit in pretty good with the culture at this point, right? Like, I mean, you've got half the country running around like chickens with their head cut. They don't know whether they're going in or coming out. You can't keep track. Their narratives don't make sense 1 week to the next, right? They're all over the place. Elon Musk was a savior of planet Earth just a couple years ago. Now he's Hitler. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Wow. Times change. All right. Noted. Dan Ives is an idiot. Doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. Noted. All right, let's talk about changes at the IRS. But first, how was tax day for you, Zach? Fun? Cool? Fine? Enjoyable?
You know, thank God I just outsourced that to the CPA. And he always asks me, do you want me to give you a rundown? And I go, no.
No, depressing.
No,
depressing.
Just we'll write the check and send the money. I don't want to know. Yeah, I'm just glad it's over. Just, you feel like I just gave blood.
Yeah, I don't mind it as much. You know what bothers me worse is the B&O taxes, the taxes I pay for the state for running a podcast out of like a garage. Yeah. I'm like, I have to pay you that much money in taxes, business taxes to the state. That bothers me more. But yeah, tax day is never a good time.
No,
you know,
it
tax
sucks.
Day should be a national holiday just for us to like decompress.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, something. We should have something for tax day. So the IRS got, the Secretary Scott Bessent sent out kind of some of the changes that they're trying to make. And he says that, you know, because there's been all this pushback against, oh my gosh, all these people being fired at the IRS or whatever it is. And he says they're trying to bring the tech into the 21st century and trying to make sure that, you know, the technology is doing most of the heavy lifting where it should be doing heavy lifting, especially as most Americans are e-filing. So I guess I'm like, okay, if you make the tech better, right? Is that better for Americans or is it worse? Because if I've got all these pencil pushers in there, right, nerding out on tech, I'm like, well, you can only get around to, you can only audit so many of us nerds. And then I'm like, well, if they improve the tech, I'm like, well, maybe they'll audit more people because it'll be easier.
You know, to me, it's all about implementation and rollout, because I've got mixed feelings on this. My first thought is, if the tech is rolled out with the best of intentions, right? And rolled out by people who are earnestly trying to make the IRS more efficient and are trying to make sure the IRS is doing what it's intended to do, which is to make sure people pay taxes, right? Not to politically go after people, not vindictive, you know what I mean? Like not partial enforcement, things like that. Part of me, I will say the majority of me is leaning to the side of it being helpful. And here's why. And this would exist in any system like that, right? Like I'm not saying, but if you have interacted with, regulators of any kind, I don't want to allege any misdoings or misdeeds or anything like that, but it does seem as though with my interactions with regulators, it does seem as though there is way too much latitude to make personal value calls on selective enforcement or how ardently we go after something. And it seems to have a lot of alignment with political affiliation.
Yeah.
Okay, so I am not making any allegations, but I think the knee-jerk reaction would be to overstate the potential risks of tech and understate the risks of the current system. you know, just because, especially with enforcement, if you have the right tech doing things the right way, by definition, it should be completely impartial. And there have been a couple things that I've gone through where I really wish there was something like that to just run the scenario through, because the scenario would have come back and been like, this isn't an issue, right? But because the regulator you're dealing with thinks it is, or maybe they thought it was coming right out of the gate, and so they sold it to their boss, or like, hey, we got a big one on our hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they find out, you know, you prove to them that that's not at all the case a month later. Well, maybe they don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got egg on their face, right? So it would eliminate so many of those things. And I don't blame the regulators themselves. They're just doing the job they were hired to do. It just, whether it's the IRS, whether it's the SEC, whether it's any regular, whether it's the BLM, or you deal with all of these regulators and you very quickly realize that their stated goal is not the actual goal.
Yeah.
Right? It's to extract things from you. It's to put, you know, to get trophies on the wall, whether you're right or wrong, they want to drill you to the wall. And it just, you kind of sit there and go, wait a second, guys, aren't we all part of the same country here? Right? Like, if I am successful business-wise, it helps you, right? The government makes more revenue. You shouldn't be trying to, right, like, shouldn't be trying to wreck my business.
Right.
Right? You should be trying to make sure we're doing things correctly. And the minute you find out that a guy's an honest actor, move along.
Yep.
Right? Go to the next thing. So if it's rolled out correctly, I think tech could be a big step in getting that personal bias out of the process. But, you know, the flip side is, you get the wrong people in charge of that tech, and God knows what they could program it to do. So, I don't know. I'm hopeful.
That's always
a fear. I'm hopeful.
Secretary Bessent said, in part, as an example, he said last year we spent $450 million on paper processing with nearly 6,500 full-time staff dedicated to the task, even though over 90% of individuals filed electronically. He said reducing paper checks has been a longstanding bipartisan goal that our administration is finally putting into action. Thanks to POTUS, this will help reduce fraud and theft. It will also remove delays that prevent hardworking Americans from receiving their vital payments. So if all that is the goal, streamlining things, reducing the size of bureaucracy to where it needs to be, then I'm on board with that.
I'm all for it.
Yep. All for it. All right. Let's get to our Doge Miss of the Week. See how that's a question? Is it a miss? Is it not? Yeah. The media thinks it's a miss because anything Doge does is a miss. So Elon has thrown out numbers, you know, since Doge was just a concept about how much they could save. It was like $2 trillion, then it was $1 trillion. And now this year he says they might only cut $150 billion. And the media is all, they're eating it up. The New York Times, Doge is far short of its goal and is overstating its progress. Here's what cracks me up about this. The whole time they've been like, you're cutting too much. You're cutting too fast.
Right.
You're not cutting in the right ways. And now it's like, oh, you're not cutting enough. Oh, you dumbass. Like, you know, oh, you overstated what you could do. It doesn't matter how much they cut. They're going to find a negative way to spin it.
Well, yeah. So should we just continue wasting the $150 billion?
Oh, yeah. And he can't do a trillion. So let's just not even, $150 billion isn't worth it.
Yeah. This is part of that incalcitrant aspect of where we're at politically right now, where it just doesn't matter what first, like you and I talked about from the very beginning. Let's just start with why were they freaking out? If you're going to cut out fraud and wasteful spending, what is the threat of that? Like, I've never understood the pushback from the very beginning, other than Trump is horrible. Anybody that's his friend is horrible. I blasted a guy on Twitter over this topic. He was responding. He was trying to talk smack to you about something on a chain.
Oh, shocking.
Bringing up they're only going to cut $150 billion. I responded to him and I go, you know what, man? You're not a serious human being, are you? Like, because a serious human being recognizes that $150 billion is sort of a significant amount of money, right? Let's not play the what percentage of the budget. Repeat that out loud, $150 billion. The other thing that I told you from the very beginning was, okay, so they came in with a stated goal and they undercut it. Has that ever happened in Washington before? Are you joking?
Yep.
Right? Like, you've got to be kidding. First of all, at least they attempted it, which nobody else has done. And if they actually succeed in cutting $150 billion, that's going to be one of the most successful cost-cutting measures we've ever taken, right? Is it where I want to get us? No. But it's one of the arguments where I was saying from the very beginning, look, I don't see any cost to this. I think it makes perfect sense. I don't see any reason not to do this. But I also didn't think that they'd come anywhere close to that $1 trillion goal. Not in a year, right? Now, if you're looking it out on a budgeting basis over a decade, well, I mean, think about it, right? If you cut $150 billion right there, that's $15 trillion, or excuse me, no, that's $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years, right? That's not insignificant at all. But what the goal should always have been, and I think it is tracking this way, is if we can, to keep the deficit from growing, right? What we, because that's what you need to do. You got to try to keep government spending flat or negative on an inflation adjusted basis and let the growth of the economy come up and fix it that way over time. So, I mean, these people, the whole thing is completely ridiculous. Oh, you shouldn't be cutting anything. You're like, oh, you don't want us to not waste money? Or now you're cutting way too much. And, you know, if they cut as much, and that was the other thing I was saying too, let's say he cut $1 trillion from the budget this year. There's no way you do that without going into a pretty sharp recession, right? There's just no way, especially with what's going on with tariffs, especially other things that are going on in the economy. All in all, again, when you look at what DOGE actually costs us, which is virtually nothing, and it saves us 150. We are so politically divided that people are pissed off because we're saving money.
Yeah.
That's how you sum it up.
Well, and as you pointed out, it's a good point. The $150 billion in a year multiplies because a lot of those, as we know, were reoccurring contracts.
Yeah.
Wasteful programs that we were spending on and not using for years on end. So that's like $150 billion this year. It'll also save us a big chunk of that next year, plus whatever additional savings. So yeah, it's all absolute nonsense. You know, Zach, you use a word. I learn a word from you every week. Every once in a while, you drop a big word that I've never even heard. Recalcitrant? An uncooperative attitude toward authority or discipline.
Yeah.
New for me. I appreciate that.
Well, good. Like calcium, right? It gets calcified, right? It just doesn't want to move. It doesn't want to give. It doesn't want to bend.
Learn something new with Zach Abraham.
That's a $10 word.
That is a $10 word. Love it. Okay. In other DOGE adjacent news, we're going through this budget process in Washington State, and you know, there's no interest in having any sort of DOGE style look at the budget here. Democrats don't want to cut anything.
No.
They want to tax, 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 tax. So we've talked before about this wealth tax idea they floated, which Governor Bob Ferguson, shock of the century, said, "I'm not signing a budget that relies on a wealth tax to balance," because he just says, "I don't even know if it's legal." So they're backing away from that, although it looks like they're going to try to sneak through like a narrow, small wealth style tax to test it in the courts, but not one that the budget relies on. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. But instead, so the wealth tax goes away, but in its place, because they're not cutting anything, they have to make up that money somewhere. They're increasing the capital gains tax, which we knew was going to happen. Voters wouldn't repeal it. So now they're like, okay, so it's going to be, they're adding an additional 2.9% surcharge on profits from the sale of bond stocks and financial assets that exceed $1 million a year. So you've got that $250,000 threshold that I think is taxed at 7% right now under capital gains. So if you have proceeds over $1 million, then those would be taxed as 7% plus 2.9%.
Yeah.
Would you rather they go back to the wealth tax idea?
I wish they'd drop both ideas because it's not going to generate any revenue. And these people won't listen. I'll say the same thing. You're not serious people. This has nothing to do with actually. Well, you know what? Actually, they probably think that this is serious. But you look at them and go, guys, you're attempting to tax people that have all of the ability to very easily work around your tax, right? So what are you going to end up doing? The vast majority of that tax revenue is going to come from people that have a windfall, an inheritance, something like that. Otherwise, fairly middle-class people, right? They're going to pay it. The wealthy, well, there's too many workarounds.
Yeah.
Right? There's way too many workarounds. I mean, at least now, are they saying it only applies to stocks, bonds, and investments, or are they saying it applies to any kind of?
Not the not property yet. So they have not expanded it to include the sale of a primary home, which would which would lump virtually everyone business, in.
But a sale of a business.
Yeah, right? I believe there's a certain threshold that's excluded, like up to a few million or something that would be excluded if it's a business. Yeah.
So once again, though, you know how silly that is. I can just reincorporate in any other state, then sell part of the business that is reincorporate in a state that doesn't have that cap gains tax.
Yeah.
There you go. See you later.
Well, it will be the same place because, you know, the issue is they're not getting enough from the capital gains tax now, or they're not getting what they wanted to get because, like, Jeff Bezos is like, see you later. And they think that this will somehow be a different outcome. And then in 2, 4, 6, 8 years, we'll be back in the same place. They won't cut anything and they'll have, you know, said, oh, this is what we're going to get from this. And they'll have allotted it to all these fantasy projects they have. And then when they realize that money's not coming in their coffers, they'll keep the fantasy projects. Then they have to find another way to fund them. And they'll run out of options for taxing the rich. So they'll just tax the middle class.
Yeah. So, you know, if government was any other business, like, it wouldn't exist, right? Like, so if you have a revenue problem, why don't you make it more attractive for people that generate revenue to come to your state, right? Why don't you make it more attractive for people that generate revenue, i.e. you and me, right, to not want to leave, to not go incorporate somewhere else? Like, it's they don't think about this because they think about it literally in terms of authoritarians, right? Like, they just do. It's, you can tell, it's just their worldview. Well, we're going to make them pay this. Well, you don't live in a totalitarian state, buddy. So we're just going to hop across the border where they're not going to hit us with a cap gains tax and see you later.
Yeah.
Right? Just, no, well, you're going to leave the state? No. I'm going to keep my house here. I'm not selling my house. I'm just going to move my business.
Yeah.
Now you don't get anything. You know, like, it's just dumb. It's just dumb. It's just stupid. It's just stupid policy. And the other thing, too, is that this is a new problem. You look, wasn't it just in 2018, 2019, we had surpluses?
Yep.
Right? So what happened? I guarantee you we can go look at the revenue side of the equation. It hasn't changed much.
Yeah.
Right? Costs blew out. So cut your costs. And then you go through the stuff that we're talking about, right? We're going through the Doge Washington stuff, looking at how inefficient we know. I mean, thinking about DC, you want to really blow your hair back. You take a look at Olympia.
Yep.
Right? They're not going to generate the numbers they're projecting. They won't even get close. And the people that will pay it will be exactly the opposite as the people they were intending to.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, you get a business that leaves, or a really wealthy person who, you know, contributed to charities and did all these wonderful things and was a job creator. I mean, you're losing so much more revenue than you're ever going to get out of that person. And the fact they don't realize that, and, you know, to your point, I just keep going back to this one example, because you're right. I mean, so in 2019, they were overfloweth with cash, and Republicans are like, please put it away. Please put it away for a rainy day. And they wouldn't. So they just kept spending, adding all these, you know, boutique things that they wanted. And inflation doesn't even come close to accounting for the increase in spending, right? Yeah. Not even close. So it's not an inflationary problem. I always go back to the example of, in the middle of this budget crisis where they're coming up with all these new taxes, they're literally funding laser hair removal for transgender inmates. So I understand that that's not a seven-figure line item, but it's about the mentality.
Yes, 100%. Well, once again, and this is why I got so fired up at that $150 billion. I don't care what the number is.
Yeah.
Okay, the point is you're trying to extract more from me. Why are you, I provide jobs here. I pay tons of taxes in this state. Why are you trying to hit me for more to pay for laser hair removal for an inmate? I don't care what the inmate wants or what. If the inmate wanted hair removal, maybe he should have spent more time not being an inmate. You know what I mean?
It's a great point.
I'm not an inmate. Why should I have to pay for it?
I had to pay for my own laser hair removal, Zach, TMI, but it's not cheap.
I got to pay for my own hair re-additions.
Oh.
Right? I'm not trying to get rid of it. I'm starting to lose it. You know, you're getting the power alleys are developed. I wonder if I could go to prison for, like, you know, maybe like a petty crime. You get a good 6 months, but could I get some hair transplants at the same time?
Well, I think what we could probably work out is one of the transgender inmates that wants to remove their hair, we could just pluck it and we could get that all in your old noggin there. I'm not promising it's going to come from their head, though.
Or I could say that I now identify as a woman and I dream of long flowing locks and they need to repopulate the dome.
Yep, you know? Let's do it. Let's do it. Class C felony gets you like 366 days. So you end up in a prison, not a jail. And then let them know that you identify as a woman, you need some long locks, and they will absolutely pay for you to get additional hair. I think guaranteed. Well,
I'm not going to have to go to Turkey to get my hair transplants anymore. Nope. I've got a plan here, and I'm fired up about it. Okay, I think it's going to work like a gem.
I think it works out great. All right, Zach, do I appreciate it? Yes, I do. I do. Still bullish on Doge?
Yeah. Okay. Hey, anybody that wants to go cut government spending and get rid of waste at their own cost, I'm going to applaud you and cheers you the entire time. So I love it.
All right. Okay. We'll see you next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.